impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'm going to tell you what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what
you need to know. Fourth quarter of the program begins right now, finishing strong here in the 5 o'clock hour. Thanks for joining us here in the program. Jeff Passant coming up here shortly. First, though, we give you the things that you just damn well need to know.
Yes.
You kidding
wouldn't
me?
Tell me? We wouldn't tell you if we didn't think you needed to know.
You need to know these things.
Yeah.
It's very important.
It will impress people.
It will impress people.
As the big voice guy said.
That's right.
Amaze your friends.
It's brought to you by our friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound. If you want the very best in smart home technology, smart office technology, it's Applause Custom Sight and Sound. In an industry where most companies don't even last 2 years, they've been in business for more than 20 years. The best when it comes to the technology, but also the best when it comes to the craftsmanship. That's why whether you're building new, renovating, or your home or office is already done, they can still wire you up, get you ready to go with the cutting edge, highest tech, smart home technology that you can find. It's Applause Custom Sight and Sound online at applausetheater.com. Let's start with, where do we want to start? I didn't even look. Let's start with the NBA.
Sure.
Last night, Jimmy Butler went down in the first half. He is now expected to limp through the rest of the game. Took the 76ers all the way to the wire. He'll miss several weeks now with a right MCL injury. So, kind of toast.
Yeah, that's a team that has found its way back from deep in the postseason, largely because of, one, Eric Spoelstra, and two, because of playoff Jimmy. And they don't have playoff Jimmy, so I don't see that happening this year.
No, I don't either. And Kentucky freshman guard Reed Sheppard will enter the draft. He'll forgo his remaining college eligibility. Number 7 prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Reed Sheppard's a fine player. Number 7? That does speak to this being a weak draft.
It does, for sure. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, if he's 7. Eey.
It's like, what are we doing here? NFL news, the NFL confirmed that Ravens standout wideout Zay Flowers, who the Chiefs reportedly had interest in trading up for, will not face disciplinary action after he was the subject of an investigation earlier this year into an alleged domestic incident in January. So Zay Flowers on the clear.
Seemingly.
Has his finger healed from smashing it against the bench after fumbling against the Chiefs.
Wow. Someone said he single-handedly, literally, cost the Ravens that game, possibly.
No. Couple of these. Jack Leiter, the number 2 overall pick in the 21 Major League Baseball draft. He will make his debut with the Rangers tonight. He's pitching well this year, but he had been kind of a bust a little bit before now. But he's going to get the call. We'll see how he does for the Texas Rangers. NHL news, the Arizona Coyotes have officially been granted by a unanimous vote of the NHL owners the ability to move to Salt Lake City. $1.2 billion sale. How about this? It's $1.2 billion. The Jazz owners, Ryan and Ashley Smith, are paying $1.2 billion. Right? Couple of provisions. Arizona will get an expansion team if a new arena is built in the next 5 years. And the deal is being facilitated through the NHL with a $200 million payment,
relocation
fee going to the owners. What? You want us to approve it? Fine. We're taking a sixth.
We want some cash.
We're taking a sixth.
Holy smokes, man.
More than 20% of the gig comes to us. So if it's so bad, if like Utah wants it so bad, you can get them to pay an extra $200 million for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. But that's how much they think they can make it work in Salt Lake City. And by the way, you dumbasses are leaving the door open to go back to Phoenix, who's been trying for a decade to get a new arena. Like, what?
My head's still spinning on that one.
Wisconsin transfer A.J. Storr, one of the top available players in the portal, is committed to Kansas. Shows the Jayhawks over schools like Illinois and Arkansas. Kansas loading up on shooters.
They need it.
Looks like they don't want to be looking like they did last year.
Just check FanDuel. They are now tied with Duke for the national championship favorite at plus 1,100.
Looking pretty good.
Where they've been hanging around since the season ended, though.
Looking pretty good. So, you know, Mizzou officially set in motion Memorial Stadium's reimagined north end zone today as the Board of Curators unanimously approved a $250 million project and unveiled renderings for the space slated to be finished in October of 26, the 100th anniversary of Memorial Stadium. You like this idea?
I do. It looks really great. I'll get some screenshots and tweet those out. But looks very cool. Keeps the Rock M, but has suites above it, and the whole setup, at least from the three angles we've seen or the three artist renderings, looks pretty cool. It keeps that kind of feeling. It's a modern version of it, but it keeps the integrity of that end zone area with the Rock M.
$250 million just for an end zone.
Yeah, that's the thing. That Kansas is doing the whole thing. Missouri had everything but that. They already did the other part.
Yeah. Interesting how
the other end zone.
KU's trying to do the whole stadium at once. Mizzou's done it kind of in, what, three different projects?
Mm-hmm.
So, how about this? Deion Sanders, you betting on him to succeed because 14 players entered the transfer portal this week to leave the Colorado football team. Deion Sanders downplayed this, said the departures won't really have a significant impact on the team. Quote, we're good. I trust the recruiting team. I trust our coaches. And please have some faith in me. We good. We all right. Sanders said most of the movement in the transfer portal right now consisted of backups and that they believe it's rare for starters to enter the portal at this stage. Well, backups matter in football.
Yeah.
Guys get hurt.
Right.
It's going to be fun to watch. Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk some baseball. Jeff Passan joins us here in the program, brought to you by our friends at Hen House. You know, you can fire up the grill this weekend. Always great specials back at the Butcher Block. Your local Hen House has you covered. Top sirloin fillets. Of course, we're talking USDA Choice Certified Hereford Beef. Their 8 ounces, just $5 each. Or how about some fresh 80% lean ground beef, ground fresh several times each and every day. It's perfect for burgers. That's just $3.99 a pound. Find all the specials and more at henhouse.com. Let's welcome Jeff Passan to the festivities. Jeff, how are you, sir?
I am doing lovely, sir. How are you?
Doing great. The Royals are winning, and, you know, that's going to continue all year. I look forward to 6:32 baseball for the entire season, and I think that's going to put them in a great spot to not only win the division, but, you know, be seated quite highly, because there's nothing we can point to right now that would say they're over their skis, correct?
No. You know, it's interesting. When I'm talking, quite often my family can tell how I feel depending on the inflection of my voice. And my goodness, my voice got very high there, didn't it?
Yes. Yes, it did. Listen, how about this stat? We did this earlier. Right now, here's the American League Central record against sub 500 teams and 500 or better. You ready?
You had to be that guy, Petro.
Well, here it is. I think it's interesting. The Guardians are in first. They're 9-3 against sub 500 teams, 3-3 against 500 or better. Royals, 10-3 against sub 500 teams, 2-4. Against 500 or better. Tigers, 7-4 against sub 500s, 3-4 against 500 or better. Those are the three clubs above 500. Twins, picked to win the division, not performing. They're 6-11. 6-11 outright. They're 6-11 against teams that are 500 or better. They have yet to play a sub 500 team. And the Chicago White Sox, who are 3-15, likewise have yet to play a sub 500 team. They're 3-15 against 500 or better. Now, I do want to point out, this is always kind of it's a little bit of a parlor trick. I mean, it's valid. The math is the math. I'm not fudging anything, but you do contribute to your opponent's record, right? So, like, when the Guardians and the Royals and the Tigers beat these sub 500 teams, that's why they're sub 500. So there is a little bit of a chicken and egg here to it, but it is telling that, and especially the next 19 games for the Royals, which are all against teams that right now are above 500, or at least were a day or so ago, it's going to be really telling what the Royals really are.
Extremely. And by the way, you know I love every time you use the phrase parlor trick, right?
You do? No, I did not know that.
I did. The last time you used parlor trick is when you said Shohei Ohtani's a parlor trick.
I asked the question, is he a parlor team? We've done this before. That's the thing. I asked the question. Is this a parlor trick? And frankly, not to get bogged down on that, but for the Angels, that's all he was a parlor trick because they didn't put anything all around right, him and
gonna,
Trout. And
gonna, Soren, I'm going to step in before you step on your own throat here. So here's the thing. You are 100% correct in this case that the Royals have played a bunch of mediocre to bad teams. And that's mainly like 8 games against Chicago White Sox, right? Of which
Astros.
Maybe. At the end of the day, are they mediocre? I don't know. We're going to see. I still think it's too early in the year to count out the Astros. But I think the important thing to remember, Soren, is this. Good teams are supposed to beat bad teams, and they're doing it, right? Like that's the important part of this. It's not like they're, ripping off some wins against good teams and then losing the games that they're supposed to win. If you can beat bad teams at a 60% clip and play good teams at 500, you know what you are in the American League Central? The division champion. So, piling up these wins against the White Sox that they have, that is a not impressive thing, but nonetheless a very good sign that the Royals, remember, as recently as less than a calendar year ago, were the team that everybody was looking forward to facing so that they could beat up on them. And yes, like you can make the argument that 7 of the Royals' 12 wins so far have come against a team that might lose 120 games. So, what you see right now with the Royals, you do have to take with more than a grain of salt. I would say a shaker of salt. But at least they're doing the thing that they're supposed to do, which is beat up on bad teams. The New York Mets, by the way, they're back over 500, lost 2 out of 3 games to them. The Baltimore Orioles, I think they're the best team in the American League. They lost 2 out of 3 games to them. And the Twins, they're going to, when it's all said and done, I think the Twins are going to be in the thick of things. They lost 2 out of 3 games to them. The lack of a sweep, though, that's the sort of thing that has sustained the Orioles now going on 90-plus series to be as good as they are. The Orioles do not get swept. Like, it's a ridiculous statistic that they have avoided getting swept for as long as they have. And they won 101 games last year, and you're near the top of the American League standings right now, and that's not an accident. That's how it goes. So I think what the Royals are doing right now is they are playing the hand that has been dealt them and playing it well. And this next stretch here, Baltimore, Toronto, Detroit, Toronto, Texas, Milwaukee, the Los Angeles Angels, Seattle, we'll see. And then Oakland and then Detroit again. Like, especially these next, I think you said 19 games, like it's a real challenge for them, and I think we're going to get a much better sense of what they're made of here.
Yeah, for sure. And listen, that's how it works. I will say this, we look it up all the time, and we talked about it beforehand. All the playoff teams, nobody crushes great teams. They all just kind of trade wins with each other, and then they all beat the hell out of the bad teams. And that's what the Royals are doing right now. So, like, the statement isn't, I want to be clear, and you said it the same way I did earlier, we're going to see. Not like, oh, they're screwed. We're going to see. Like, if they can come through those 19 and be 9-10, they're a contender, right? They're doing what teams do, right?
If they're
10-9, that's great, right? Even if they come home and they're 8-11, They're still in the mix. You know, 8-11 is probably coming into the season. You would have expected this stretch to go 7-12. So 8-11 would probably be improvement off what our expectations were coming into the year. It would just kind of speak to, listen, if they can stay in the race, then they probably are going to need to make a move to bolster themselves somewhere. Those are the returns we'll get, and we'll be at about, you know, we'll be approaching the 40-game mark. We'll be approaching Labor Day and all the different things that, or Memorial Day, excuse me, all the different things that everybody likes to point to.
I hope they're approaching Labor Day in a good position. That would be nice.
Yeah, we'll be reaching the milestones that everybody uses to actually judge teams, and they'll be in pretty good shape. So, you know, that's the thing. Here's my question. The Milwaukee Brewers are in first place, right? And they have traded, and I got people all riled up. I got Randy Cicerelli all riled up about this. They traded Corbin Burns in the offseason. They traded Josh Hader in the midst of a playoff run. And here they are. Are they the prototype of what all small market teams need to be doing? That no matter where you are in the standings, no matter what time of year, make the trade that is good for the big picture always. And if you do that every time, and of course, yes, you draft well, scout well, develop well, do well in trades. Yes, none of this erases the need to be a good ball club all around. But that the recipe that the Brewers are teaching us, you just always make the move that makes this the most sense big picture, and your team will benefit in the long haul.
I mean, they're just following the model that the Rays have, right? Like, it's not like what the Brewers are doing right now is something that's entirely unique.
The Hader deal, the Rays haven't made a Hader deal.
Yeah, maybe not one that, like, enraged their fan base quite the same, but that's because the Rays fan base is, you know.
Non-existent.
The Hader deal, and here's the thing, Saran, I think the Rays, they've done this for so long now that it's almost like the people who root for them are inured to it. The Brewers, like, it's cutthroat the way that they've approached this. And that's just not something that the Royals in the past have been willing to do.
Should they?
I'm not. It depends. Is everything else in place? Have they turned their scouting and player development departments into machines?
To be determined. Like the results are no. Just to answer that question before you go too far, no. To which I would ask, isn't that even more reason to, like, where this came up to be an argument was I talked about trading Salvador Perez. And Randy said, and I think most people would agree with him, if you didn't trade Salvador Perez when you were terrible, why would you trade him now when you're contending? And my point is
I agree with Randy on that, but go ahead.
I think the answer to that, if you believe in making the move, is because we didn't fix our system then doesn't mean we shouldn't fix it now.
Yeah, that's fine. I get the perspective on that. Salvador Perez, for what it's worth, would not bring a lot back. Right. There are certain players who and especially certain positions that can get you quite a haul at the trade deadline. And in the off season as well, you look at who the Rays trade, generally speaking. Look at Tyler Glasnow, for example. He was on the cusp of free agency and starting pitching. Always in demand at the trade deadline, relief pitching. You can get almost as much for a relief pitcher as anything at the deadline. And Josh Hader was, best in class. Catchers? Old catchers? Bring him back a lot in a trade? That just does not happen. Usually, in order to get something big in return, it needs to be a younger guy. And so, in this vein, it would be more of like a Cole Reagans same situation. You're not trading Cole Reagan-Surin, right?
No, but I was going to ask you about Brady Singer. Like, you know, to me, you sit down, you say, okay, we want to extend you. Here's what we're thinking. And he goes, no, not even close. I mean, like, because the reason I bring it up, I think this will answer itself because they will have injuries. Do you agree the Royals will have injuries?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
They're younger than most teams, so they're going to be healthier, certainly from the position player side. But pitchers are dropping at an alarming rate. And I said, okay, let's, you know, it takes, we did a breakdown several years ago of what the average number of starters playoff teams used to get through the regular season. And it was between 8 and 12. I said, so let's say the Royals need 10. Who are the next five guys? Right? It's, well, Jordan Lyles comes out of the bullpen. You know, Angel Zerpa comes out of the bullpen. Jonathan Bolin is throwing well and down in AAA and was a prospect. And then you're done. Daniel Lynch is not pitching well, but you turn to him next. And then the last guy, I mean, go figure, okay? Like, they don't even have that. So the point to all this is if you look at it and say, right now, okay, we're off to a good start. This is why I think these 19 games, to bring it back to that, are really important. If they would go 14-5 or 12-7, all right, now we start going, okay, this team is really good. But if they do come home at 8-11, okay, we're a work in progress. And are we really going to, you know, trade prospects of any kind to bolster this effort when we look at it and go, even in July, August, we don't know that we've got enough to get to the finish line, so why would we do it? And why wouldn't we, if we don't think we're going to be there, bolster ourselves for the future?
It's one of those things where your logic does make sense. I'm not going to discount that. I'm not going to sit here and say, Surin, Petro, you blabbing fool. Like,
right.
Why would you ever consider something like that? I also look at the last 10 years. And, you know, I think you have to have a little bit of goodwill built up among the fan base in order to be cutthroat. I think there needs to be a sign that, hey, you know, we may do this trade that you don't like, this trade that makes us worse right now, but better in the future. And you need to believe in us that we're going to be back next year in this same position. You need to sell fans on that. You need to sell the clubhouse on that because, I mean, the Brewers clubhouse in the wake of the Hader trade was a mess. Like, they made that trade. They were in first place at the time, and they collapsed and missed the playoffs, right? So that was even more of an egregious situation, I think, for fans that they still, frankly, haven't forgiven the organization for. You know, Brewers fans still point to that as, like, one of those moments. That was one of those moments where, like, things got real. They understood what the calculus was, and they don't like it. You know, trades have done really well for that team. They've gotten William Contreras in a trade. They've gotten Christian Yelich in a trade. But they also have a farm system that pumped out Jackson Churio this year and that has Tyler Black coming and where Joey Ortiz in the return for the Burns deal is hitting well and Corbin Burns or, Gale Hall is in their rotation. They have the proverbial dope on the table. They have something to show off to the public.
Sure.
And say, hey, you know, look, we're doing this now, and we can do this because we have done so successfully in the past. So it's like saying, don't at me. You know, don't question me. I don't want to hear it because, you know, in the end, we put a winning product on the field damn near year in, year out. The Royals can't say any of that. They can't speak to a great and abundant and productive farm system. They can't say we've been winning. they just don't have the goodwill built up at this point to do it without it being a major and ugly to do for the fan base. And I don't know, man, it's like I said, your logic, totally fair. But I think there are concerns when you do something like this that go beyond the logic.
Sure.
And to the emotional, and when you factor in the stadium situation.
There you go.
It makes it even more so.
Yeah, if you're going to put another vote up in August, if you're going to put a vote up next yep. April, yep. then you need to put as much goodwill forward to the fan base as possible.
Absolutely.
I will say, though, that next year will roll around, and if you're losing, no one's going to be. But, yeah, remember, they kept Brady Singer. It's okay. We'll tolerate it. Next year, you will be cheered or booed. You'll be loved or hated based solely on your record. That's how it works every single year. But the Royals are different with the stadium part of the equation. I definitely agree with that. I want to ask you about Scott Boras. Is he going to, you know, he's already lost some clients, not all of them. Cody Bellinger isn't leaving him. Jordan Montgomery did. What's the future of Scott Boras, and have owners finally, called his bluff, and does he need to change his game as an agent?
I think agents are always changing their games, right? Evolve or die, that's the business. I think when you assess where Scott Boras is right now as opposed to where he's going to be six months down the road, those are two very different conclusions. Right now, a little bit wounded, you know? There could be other players who leave him, but then November 1st is going to roll around, and here is his list of free agents. Juan Soto, Alex Bregman, Corbin Burns, Pete Alonso, potentially Cody Bellinger, potentially Blake Snell, potentially Matt Chapman. He's got a number of guys. Tyler O'Neill, who next to Mookie Betts, maybe the best player in baseball so far this season. And the veterans like Max Scherzer, Yusei Kikuchi is off to a phenomenal start right now. I mean, you know, one or two of those guys is a great class for any other agent, and Boras has them all.
But downfalls begin somewhere. At some point, Rome started getting smaller. Okay. And
sure.
Bill Belichick, when Tom Brady left, and I'm like, this is the beginning of the end. He needs to tank out for a quarterback. Everyone's like, what are you talking about? He's Bill Belichick. And now everybody's like, yeah, see, we told you. Everyone's there to join the bandwagon. Like, if you're an agent, that's why I say, does he need to change his game? You said they all do. I think that's very noteworthy. I make a note of that for sure, that they're always kind of evolving. But the strong arm tactic of the owners, they're analytically driven now. They're not George Steinbrenner saying, I got to get it. I got to get on the back page. Like, I think, to answer my own question, yes, he needs to change. And right now, unless they change the structure of the collective bargaining agreement, the owners have them. They're not overpaying, especially when the Mets didn't lock and load again this offseason. The one guy who kind of was like, oh, I'll overpay for old guys, seemed to have learned his lesson in 1 year.
So, Ren, what do you think Juan Soto is going to get?
A ton because he's young.
But like a ton, you know, a Mike Trout ton, like $426 million, or a ton like over $500 tons?
I think he'll set a new – depending upon his season, which he's off to a good start. I mean, I did see the thing that his spray yep. chart doesn't really – he's a lot of balls are going to die in left center. That would have been out in other places. But I'm going to assume with the guys around him, we'll see if Judge can stay healthy, yada, yada, yada. Yes, he'll set a new record.
Okay. Does an agency die in the same year that a new record for salary is set?
Do they die? No, but does the death continue? Perhaps, yes. I mean, if guys are like, listen, I can't, you know, that's always been the game with him. He's had a lot of guys. He's screwed up on a lot of guys, right? You know, what's his name? The DH of the Royals in 15 that, you know, he sent
Kendrys Morales.
Yeah, Kendrys Morales. He blew that one.
I think the most obvious one there before this offseason was Mike Moustakas when he turned down the qualifying offer.
He blew that one. I mean, he blew Ray Sanchez. The Royals offered him multiple years, and you know, over the course of the next 4 or 5 years, he didn't get to the amount of money that he had. Now, some people say, well, he went and played for a winner with the Braves, and you know, but there have been a lot, but they don't get publicized because they are the guys. Mike Moustakas is not a star. The stars get the pub, and every guy, just like every American, thinks the American dream is me. I'm going to be the billionaire. So, yes, we need to, you know, put everything so that I can become a billionaire. Well, every ball player thinks they're Trout, so they want the system to benefit Mike Trout.
Yeah, I do appreciate you using Ray Sanchez as an example. Because what you're essentially saying is you had to go back to 2001 in order to find examples of where he is.
I wanted to bring up guys people knew in this town.
Fair enough. I know that there have been plenty of others in that time, but when you represent more clients than anyone else, there are going to be misses. Other agencies have misses too. And other agencies misread the market, just not at the volume that Boris did this winter, right? Like, it was a bad winter. There's no doubt about it. But listen, I talk to agents all the time, and there are two different kinds of agents. There are the ones who believe that this is the beginning of the end for Boris, and there are others that say the man has been knocked down before and comes back and throws haymakers and knocks out everyone else afterward. History tells us he's going to be fine, but you're right. At some point, the empire does end. I just don't know that it's going to be now necessarily.
Yeah, and that's fair. It was his roughest offseason. Can we say that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the fact that, like, if you had gone at the beginning of the offseason and told the Royals you can get Jordan Montgomery for 1 year and $25 million, the Royals would have been all over that. I don't know if Seth Lugo or Michael Wacha would be a Royal right now. So the opportunity to get a guy of Montgomery's ilk would have very much appealed. They didn't even play in that sandbox because they thought it was going to be, you know, 5 or 6 years and $100 to $120 million. Bully for the Diamondbacks for jumping in and taking advantage when they did it. And Bellinger, you know, I would have bet a year's salary he was going to get six figures. Ended up with $80 million. Blake Snell, coming off his second Cy Young award, six figure season guaranteed, $62 million. Matt Chapman, you know, I think 54 was probably lower than I thought, but not entirely out of the realm of possibility, considering just how mediocre he was for the last really 5 months of last season. But they're going to be Boris clients who think this year. There always are, but so does the best hitter on the market. Burns is the best pitcher on the market. Alonso is the best power hitter on the market. Like, the you know. The roster is going to do okay. It's just a matter of what expectations are going into the winter. And the guy to keep an eye on is Alonso, because Soto's going to get paid. Burns is going to get paid. They're too damn good not to. But Pete Alonso is not the sort of demographic that teams are going into free agency like frothing over. He is an aging, slugging right-handed only first baseman. That generally does not do well in free agency. And so if he hits the winner looking for $250 million, he ain't getting it. Like, I can say that right now. That is where the point you make about teams being as analytically inclined as they are really is going to manifest itself. So I think that we will get a much better sense of whether Boris has pivoted in the way that the market is suggesting he should, based on Alonso. That's the litmus test.
Yeah, and I think it doesn't behoove teams to sit around and wait and hope that they get a guy at the end of free agency. and usually have to overpay for him, it's better off to go ahead and spend your money early and know what you got and be able to build on. I think that's what teams
can. I don't know, though. I mean, the teams that waited this year, Seren, did pretty damn well, did they not?
They did. I'm talking from a Boris perspective. No, Boris didn't.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, the teams did. Yeah. But I think they were teams that constantly run below what is their max, and if there's bargains at the end, okay, we'll grab them, but we're not going to get strong-armed into $240 million for a pitcher just because it's like, well, this was our plan, and we got to make it work no matter what. Those days, I think, are gone. I think teams are just smarter now. Let's get to our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get care from the experts the Royals trust to make the right call. Learn more at KansasHealthSystem.com/Royals. Jeff, I'll begin you with this. Tell me, how often do you get mistaken for Tom Verducci?
Once and only once. And it was, I believe it was by the Today Show. So
yeah.
I suppose there are worse places or people to mistake you, and definitely worse people to be mistaken for. Tom Verducci, not just a legend, but the man is over 60, I believe, and still has a jawline and hairline that make men half his age.
Yeah. That photo is featured prominently on Jeff's Twitter, so you can see it. And what a perfect segue for the next question, because we know how important your mop is. Spray, mousse, gel. What kind of product are we using on that?
I use, let me see what it's called. It's called Redken Pliable Paste. So it's sort of like, I'm trying to think of the consistency. It's a little bit wet, and when you put your fingers together and pull them apart, it creates like little fibers.
Oh.
And so you run it through like dampish hair, and you just hope you're not going on TV in the next few minutes, because it will get kind of shiny and harden up. You know, I've had a busy morning if you ever see me on TV and it looks like I've got a little bit of soul glow in my hair. Because like once it hardens up and you run your fingers through it, then it just looks like natural hair. Otherwise, I look like a Lego. Like a straight up crispy helmet.
Based on how you described it, it sounds like you could save some money and just buy rubber cement and rub that through your hair. So, you know, that'd be
no,
good.
It's not like firm texture. Like I don't have to like dig my hand in. Man, what is the consistency like in terms of something that could be similar to food? That's what we're always looking for, right? Like,
right.
What kind of food is our hair product?
Sure, exactly. Exactly. We do it every day.
It's almost like a pudding.
Okay.
It's like the consistency of a pudding.
Pudding, okay. All right, good to know. All right, tell me, does Mike Trout finish his career with the Angels, yes or no?
No.
I agree. And finally, Justin Verlander expected to be back on Friday. Curtis and I have a wager, as you probably remember. He said there'll never be another 300-game winner. He said it the day Randy Johnson became the last of the 300-game winners. His point has been 100% validated. But I bet him there would be. My best bet, Justin Verlander's at 257. What does he finish at?
Justin Verlander might be your only bet at this point, Petro. I'll throw a number out there. 200.
No.
That starts with a two, by the way.
No,
yeah.
No.
So, Brad, he's 41.
Yeah. No, when Ryan pitched till he was 46. Let's go.
Wow, congratulations for using the outlier of all outliers as your example.
Come on, what's the number?
He wants, let's put it this way. He wants 300. I think 293.
293. Oh, that'll be great just to watch Curtis sweat as we get to the 290s. By the way, listen, beautiful lady. I'm sure she's wonderful, but Kate Upton has got to drive a guy crazy at some point. So he's got to want to keep pitching.
Wait, what?
Don't you think no baseball player wants to be home all year round? They all say that, and then a year after they retire, they're all doing something else.
you know what? I'm just going to leave that one be. I am not even going to try and understand your logic there, because sometimes it's just, it's petro logic.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Okay. We'll take it.
And yeah, just doesn't make any damn sense. Yeah. But hey, that's the fun of it.
We'll just agree that I operate on a higher plane, and we'll leave it at that. Jeff? Always great catching up with you. We'll do it again next week.
Sure. Thank you, Saran. Take it easy, pal.
But first to Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Who's the only player ever to lead the NBA in points per game and assists per game in the same season?
Points and Oscar Robertson? No. Tiny Archibald.
Tiny Archibald.
Yeah.
Born on this date.
I knew that.
73.
I knew it. I was just thinking aloud.
34 game and 11 assists a game.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. We just gave it away. Joe'sKC.com. You can order yours tonight. They are outstandingly efficient. So even if there's a line, get on in there. They are unbelievably quick with the best barbecue in the world. It's at Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, 47th and Mission, 119th and Strangline, and 117th and Row. Ordered online at Joe'sKC.com. Leave you with this. Last night in the Sixers Heat game, we saw Joel Embiid kind of hobble around, clearly not 100%, but play in the game, be back and play for the Sixers. We saw Jimmy Butler go down with the last play, basically, of the first quarter, and then limp through three more quarters to play. And people say, well, all they care about is the money. Whether he played or not this year, Joel Embiid is guaranteed to make at least $166 million more dollars on his contract with the Sixers. Jimmy Butler is guaranteed to make at least $101 million more dollars. And they're playing in the play-in, not the NBA Finals. Yet both of them are out there getting it done. Okay? Yeah. Let's calm down. Like, those are a couple of guys who want to play ball. And you can get mad that Joel Embiid hasn't gone further. Right? Or Jimmy Butler hadn't won a championship. But these two guys will give everything they have, regardless of the fact that they're going to make $267 million more dollars.